Welcome to The Exchange here on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. Well, yesterday was Iowa's primary election, also South Dakota's primary. There were a few surprises, really, in federal, state, or local elections, and turnout was fairly high, as the state records say, for a primary election. Voting levels varied across the state. Today we're going to take a look at who won in some of these primaries. Some were hotly contested, and actually both parties has a few of those. With me today is Jeremy Dumkreger, chairman of the Woodbury County Democratic Party. Jeremy, it's good to have you here.
It's good to be here. Thanks, Mary.
You know, I know during the year it's hard for you to get over here because you're teaching.
I am. Yep. K through 12 art.
It's K through 12, time. Right. And didn't you just receive an award from the Democratic Party of Iowa?
Yeah, they recently announced it. It's the Hall of Fame Outstanding Chair Award. It'll be given on the 23rd.
That must be really a great feeling.
It is. It's a nice honor, especially considering I've only done this for a year. It's a tremendous honor. Actually,
I think you really hit the ground running. I remember when you first started and you talked about really trying to do some grassroots work with folks.
Right. We tried to think outside the box and really just push the envelope with the fun things that we can do to get people interested, motivated, and just keep them working. And it's been a fun year. We've had about 100 events, give or take. Of course, two special elections helped with getting people as motivated and staying motivated. So it was a lot of fun.
And also with me is Susan Stewart from the Woodbury County Republican Party. Susan, it's great to have you here.
Thank you.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do at the Woodbury County Republican Party?
I was recently elected the chair of the Woodbury County Republican Party. I'd been involved with the party for about 40 years. Well, more like 30 years
now. I figured you'd done it for a long time.
But I was most recently the parliamentarian, and I guess I would call myself a Republican activist.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to have both of you here. You know, I wanted to start off with the primary, the Democratic primary for governor. Fred Hubbell won that race. He got 55% of the vote. I mean, he was leading for quite some time, as we knew. Bolton dropped out recently, so perhaps he got some of those votes. Hubbell said that he won in part because voters are sending a strong message that they're tired of Republican priorities. And I was just wondering, I thought I'd ask both of you, maybe I'll start with you, Susan. What do you think about that?
I think that's kind of an unusual thing to say in a primary. I think he appealed to probably through his significant television budget,
right,
that extended over a long period of time. He acquainted himself with Democrat voters and their issues. And, you know, I think that's why he won, because he had so much more presence throughout the state than any of the other candidates did.
Mm. Jeremy?
Well, you know, the turnout was incredibly high. Here in Woodbury, 4,254 Democrats cast their ballots yesterday, and in previous absentees, outnumbered the Republicans by about 200 votes, which is unheard of in those primaries. In 2014, similar primary, Republicans outvoted us like 4,000 votes. So it's more than just Fred Hubbell. It's Chris Hall, it's Jackie Smith, it's all these candidates that are coming together. And we're just tired of the Kim Reynolds agenda.
So that you think that really got them out to vote?
Yeah, I do. I do. Exactly.
Can I disagree?
Susan,
a little
you go
bit?
Ahead.
We have very good turnout. I think it really depends on who has the hot race. In 2014, Sam Clovis was a candidate. We had 31% turnout. Democrats had I don't know if you had a contest then or not, but you had like 9% turnout. 2016, you know, King versus Bertrand was a hot race with a local candidate. We had 31% turnout. You guys had 11.6% turnout, but you had a four-way Senate race on your primary. And this year, we had 20.6% turnout. You had 24% turnout. These are my calculations based on, you know, we didn't have anything very hot. The Secretary of Ag race, we had about 3,000 votes, but that was truly a geek race. I got about 18 calls from the candidates because I went to the district convention, and I think they use those kinds of lists. So you guys had a much hotter race this time than we did.
Yeah, but Democrats aren't voting because there's more people in the race. They're voting because collective bargaining was gutted. They're voting because of all these different bills that are going through Congress or through the State House. that really aren't needed or asked for. And we're decided we just want a basic common sense approach to let's just fix things instead of making it worse.
Well, and I agree that that's what I think the Democrats are interested in. But at the primary level, I don't really know how that translates into beating Kim Reynolds. I think that translates into finding a candidate that you think shares your values and has the best possibility of beating Kim Reynolds. I'm not sure Fred Hubbell is. He obviously has the most money to spend because he's self-funding himself and he's adding a lot of money to his campaign. I'm sure he's got a lot more name recognition now than any of the other ones would. But, I think you guys had a slightly better turnout than we did, but you didn't reach the 31% turnout numbers that we've had when we've had hot races featuring local candidates as opposed to a candidate who isn't from the area.
Mm. I would like to ask about a comment that the governor said that she basically said that Hubbell was someone who won because he's wealthy, something about him not being able to balance a checkbook. I don't know if that was quite fair.
Well, I'm pretty sure Fred Hubbell, with all of his financial experience, knows how to balance a checkbook. I mean, it's pretty given. And considering Kim Reynolds has to ask for money constantly from a number of different sources from the government, I'm pretty sure maybe she should check her comment.
Hmm. Susan?
Well, I think there are a lot of candidates that have more reason to have to balance their checkbook than not. I do know that I think Fred Hubbell was on the Power Fund board. I think he's certainly familiar with the way the government can spend money and give tax credits because he's been in positions where he's had to deal with those kinds of issues as well as give money. But I don't think I'm ever going to belittle a candidate on whether or not he or she has balanced his own personal checkbook, because there are just a lot of candidates with a lot of backgrounds that can do a good job regardless of their financial wherewithal or not.
Yeah, it seemed kind of off point for, what we were talking about in the governor's race at any rate. Well, Steve King, 4th District Republican, longtime Republican, won his primary as expected. He was challenged by Cindy Hansen, who was actually, I thought, a good candidate, someone who ran a good campaign and got out to meet a lot of people. Susan, when someone, challenges an established candidate in either party, is it ever sort of, are there ever people within the party who really just don't like that? They don't like to see someone who's in a safe seat challenged within the party?
2 years ago, Rick Bertrand, the local state senator, challenged Steve King.
Right.
There was much better turnout. I think there was a much higher proportion of the vote. Rick Bertrand was a better known candidate. He still fell well short.
Mm-hmm.
But there were about 2,000 more votes in that race than there were this time. I heard Cindy Hansen speak a couple of times. She came to our caucus and she came to the district convention. I think what Democrats and people who don't understand Republicans don't understand is that Steve King is a rock star to the Republican
right,
base.
Right, right.
And it is there. I can think of a few people that could challenge him effectively.
Yeah. He was here last Friday at Western Iowa Tech, and I asked him what he had, he had been concerned about the race, and he said he hadn't given it a lot of thought because he hadn't felt that he had been challenged on any of his issues in a real substantial manner. And I thought maybe that was true.
I do believe that Cindy, when I heard her speak, she just talked really more about change than anything.
Yeah.
That was kind of her mantra, and that certainly worked in the past, but
right.
She fell short this time.
Well, Jeremy, really a lot of the talk, though, was on the Democratic side. With J.D. Shulton winning a big win mm-hmm. in that race. And I had talked to him the week before, and then last week I had Leanne Jacobson here and John Passion, and it was a really good conversation about the issues. And I think they all shared some of the same opinions about most of these things. But J.D. really, it seemed like from early on, he really pulled out in front. What is it about J.D.?
J.D. just has an appeal to him. Once you meet him, you just love him to death. He's like your little brother, or your best friend. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's got that Winnebago. His dad drives him around in. He's been all over the place. People have met him.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you see him going forward in the general election?
I see him going forward right in that Winnebago all the way to Congress. That's what I see.
Do you think that he will look at some of these issues with Steve King, looking at, say, like immigration in particular, where Steve King has taken a lot of heat in the last year or so?
Right. I think we have to take a really good look at it, at what's going on. You know, Steve King hasn't really done a lot for anybody here, and I think that's why Cindy Hansen resonated so well with her party. 25% of the vote went to Cindy, and I would encourage all those voters to, you know, if you're not happy with Steve King, that rock star, you know, come on over to our rock star, because he's got it going on.
Susan?
Well, resonate isn't, when you compare just the results in the King versus Bertrand and the King versus Hansen race, there was not very much resonance,
right.
I guess, is the appropriate word. Right. I do love his commercial. I just think his commercial is really cool. The one about the $1 million, I think that's a great commercial. He's a local guy.
Yeah. Baseball player.
And, yeah, baseball player. Again, as I said, that there are a lot of candidates that bring a lot of different backgrounds to the table. I'm not sure what a baseball player and a legal assistant brings to the table, but I am not going to criticize him for his background. We have a lot of new candidates this time, particularly on the Democratic side, that live at home with their parents, may have been in the legislature for a couple of years, and I'm not going to ever criticize anyone for their background. Or
well,
lack thereof.
You just did, kind of. But I think the thing about when you just say he's just a baseball player, he was a baseball player. He traveled the world. He got to know people. And then he's a paralegal, right? He goes out there. He helps. I don't even know what a paralegal does, but it's lawyerly stuff, right?
They do a lot of the grunt work for
right, the
for
grunt
lawyers,
work. They do
right?
the research. Yeah. He knows the background of it all. And I think just to say that's pretty much nothing, I think that's unfair.
I'm not saying it's nothing. I'm just saying it's a different kind of background. I'm just saying we have a wide variety of people with a wide variety of backgrounds, and people should take those backgrounds into consideration.
And I'm sure they thought that about Steve King when he was first elected.
Well, and he's a small businessman. He has actually had to make money and make payroll and those kinds of things. So,
well, looking at some of the other the other congressional primaries in the state. And two women, Cynthia Axne, won the primary in the 3rd District. She's going to run against David Young. Young is another seasoned politician. And Abby Finkenauer, who 28 years old, a two-term state House representative. She would be, is correct, Jeremy, the youngest woman elected to Congress if she were to defeat incumbent Rod Blum. Is that right?
That's what I've read, yep.
She's getting a lot of press nationally lately. I've noticed that. I looked around the web, and I saw a lot about her.
Yeah, she's really cool. I'm going to be honest, I do not follow that race as closely as probably people in that district. But, yeah, she's exciting to watch.
You know, and political analysts are saying that if she were to take over that seat, and then also if Cindy were to win, those two would be a big factor in sort of changing the tide in the House, because those are seats that could be turned. And so nationally, Democrats are looking at those seats. And it's kind of, and really they came out of just regular backgrounds and made this work.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really, we have lots of female candidates who've done really well. And it's exciting to see not only these folks in Iowa do so well, but around the country.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the incumbents, or Republican incumbents, are concerned about this?
Oh, I'm sure they are. They are both two-term, very seasoned. At least David Young has a lot of political experience. They're both two second-term incumbents. I guess a rule of thumb, at least that I learned in political science, is once you've been in there once, you have a hard time kicking that person out. It will remain to be seen. You know, Abby Finkenauer had a couple people running against her, but for whatever, I mean, she was the head person,
right,
in that. And that is
right.
A very – Rod Blum having two terms in that district is extremely unusual.
Yeah,
that's
what I
heard. It is
that's
a very, very heavily
heard.
Democratic
yeah.
area.
Yeah, so –
So we will see what happens. But I at least classic political science would tell you that two terms is a big benefit for an incumbent in a congressional House race.
Mm-hmm. I was also looking at Deidre, is it DeGere?
Yep.
DeGere. She has won in her first bid, primary bid for statewide office. She will go on to face Republican incumbent Paul Pate for Secretary of State in the November election. And she makes history because she's the first African-American nominated by a major political party for a statewide office, which seems incredible to me. But it's true.
Right, right. And she's just a great candidate overall. And I can't wait to – I voted for her in the primary, and I can't wait to vote for her in the general as well. Mm. And I know a lot of people in Woodbury are ready to do just that and to fight for her every step of the way.
And she would, you know, make history again if she were elected.
Right.
Correct?
Correct. Yeah, I'm sorry, yes.
Right, is that right?
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Okay, yeah, I was, so she's getting a lot of buzz. Do you think
she is? You know, she's one I don't know a whole lot about. I know her opponent, who I was kind of surprised, lost the race. This is his, maybe this because it's his third chance at running for office. Sometimes it's anything goes with these down-ticket offices. But, you know, we didn't even field a treasurer candidate this year, and it's because Mike Fitzgerald, the treasurer, has a continual advertising campaign, advertising his 529s year-round. It's real hard. Some of these down-ticket races are very difficult for the party that's not in power, not taking advantage of those advertising opportunities.
Hmm. Well, I was also looking at the Republican primary for Secretary of Agriculture.
Yes.
Mike Naig is still leading, but Zumbach, who was here earlier this week, is behind. But so now, are they close enough so they will have to decide this at the convention?
We're going to have a convention just like the convention that originally nominated Steve King in 2002. I don't know about Democrats, but when we have primaries are not good for a party. I think the Secretary of Agriculture will be a little bit of different primary, but we had, you know, since 2002, we've had primaries. We had Bob Vanderplaats running for governor several times. We had the Steve King contest, and I think the Secretary of Agriculture primary or convention vote is going to be a much more gentlemanly and ladylike affair. Mike came very, very close to 35%.
He did, right.
Very, very close.
He just didn't make it. And Zumbach, well, he's been in the state Senate.
Correct.
And he seems to have a good handle on the issues.
Any one of these five candidates would make a fine Secretary of Agriculture. They both have a lot of agricultural experience. They're either all farmers or very close to
They've
farming.
Been the Farm Bureau, Soybean Association. They all seem to have quite a lot
Correct.
Of experience.
So.
And in Iowa, this is a big thing. Secretary of Agriculture is a huge thing.
It's an important state position.
It is. So, well, we'll see what. When is that convention?
I believe it is next, the 16th.
Oh, so it's coming right up.
It's coming right up.
Oh, so you don't have a lot of time to wait.
No, I'm going to take my phone off the hook.
Okay.
I think because I suspicion we'll be getting a lot of calls, emails. When you're like me and you're an activist and they have your phone number.
Right, yeah. Today we're talking about the primaries that were yesterday in Iowa. I'm talking with Susan Stewart, the chairperson of the Woodbury County Republican Party, and Jeremy Dumkreger, chairman of the Woodbury County Democratic Party. I was reading in one of these publications online, I think it might have been was it Vox or Bustle? One of those the kids read about the women in politics. And they went through some of the Democratic candidates from Iowa, the females that were making a lot of press. But they also talked about Kristi Noem in South Dakota, who won her primary.
That's correct. I just want to point out that we do have Governor Reynolds.
We elected
the first female governor of Iowa. And what I really hope that the media does, this is just my pitch to the media in general, I get tired of reading articles in Politico about Kim's almond-shaped eyes and cute smile. I hope that this is for both Republican and Democratic races. I hope we can not focus on how cute these candidates are, what they look like, just because they are female.
It's kind of a, you know, double-edged sword, because if they're seen as being attractive, that's distracting. If they're seen as being unattractive, that's just cruel.
It's kind of irrelevant whether she has almond-shaped eyes. I don't believe they ever look at Senator Grassley's eyes and say that he's got big eyes or little eyes or blue eyes or brown eyes.
Probably not. No, that's definitely possibly an issue. And I was reading a lot in the last day or so about this desire to have this blue wave. Have you heard about this, Jeremy? They want a blue wave of Democratic candidates to sweep over Iowa in the fall election. What do Democrats have to do to make that happen? All these incumbents, I mean, there were so few really contested primaries in the Republican Party because of all the incumbents.
Right.
So what has to happen?
We just have to keep pushing forward. I mean, the Democrats have never been as activated as they are now. They just haven't been. It doesn't matter, you know, how many people were in the race. We're just ready to roll on this, and we're going to keep pushing forward. We're going to knock doors like we've never knocked before, just like we did in the Rita DeYoung election. You know, we came up short there, but we made them spend a lot of money.
And she's running again.
And she's running again.
Against Jacob Bossman.
Jacob Bossman, yep.
Jacob Bossman.
You know, and we made them spend a lot of money, and we're going to put up fights in every place we can find a place to put up a fight in.
Wasn't she the candidate that they did the postcard writing that there was a group, a national group, and they picked these races, and they send out postcards. They have handwritten postcards to people in the district. They sort of pinpoint them. So she was one of those that they were doing that for.
Yep, several groups actually came forward and did that.
Yeah, she had backing. But, you know, Jacob, he was in his first...
He is in his first term.
Right.
I'm not sure these postcards had a lot of impact. He still won by 10 to 12% of the vote.
With $120,000
and we are radio perfectly, ads and TV ads. We are totally prepared to spend money if we need to on these races. The Republican Party of Iowa is in very good financial shape. You know, I'm looking at these turnout figures from yesterday. Yeah, the Republican turnout was 20.6%, but the Democrats have not, they're not up to 30% that we had 2 years ago. And so I'm not saying there's a lot, there's obviously a lot more Democratic interest, 20% compared to 9 and 11% is a lot, but we have a lot of fired up people too. And I also don't think there's ever, just my personal experience is there has never been and probably never will be anything quite like the Republican-Trump wave we saw 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think that was an anomaly, right?
It was. It may well have been an anomaly. It certainly exceeded the kinds of votes we've ever had.
Yeah, that night there was just, I wouldn't put it too strongly if I said there was shock and awe amongst, you know, certain groups in this country. I remember watching it on TV, his win, and they were at the Democratic convention and the Democrats were going to get up and speak. And the people in the audience literally, they just were dumbstruck. And it was such a huge event. It was like a cultural happening. And I think it's taken a while and Democrats have sort of gotten back up and got going since then.
Well, I think that's evident from yesterday's vote. You know, we had 2,000 more people vote than we've ever had vote before. I mean, it's evident. And we're on our way to that blue wave. It does exist, and it will happen in about 5 months.
Do you think it's important? You talk a lot about, you know, grassroots efforts. Do you think it's important to have these local candidates also, you know, making up part of this wave? You talk about here, you know, county supervisors. We've got two of them who are up for election this fall being challenged, Jeremy Taylor by Flora Lee and now Matthew Ung by Carter Smith, who had a primary with Gary Lewis.
Correct.
So is that, do you think that's important as well on that level?
I think it's vital because that's how we get volunteers because, sure, there's the blue wave on top, right? But there's the underlying ocean underneath, and you need that ocean underneath of friends and family and people like Flora Lee, Carter Smith. These guys, they have a community behind them of supporters and volunteers, and they've already been showing up at events and volunteering for them.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, Susan, I'm sure you've followed the whole issue with the regions of the mental
sure,
health and disability
yeah.
and how
yes.
that's been a kind of a thing that's upset people. But now it seems like it's somewhat settled. We're going to change, I believe, we're from Sioux Rivers. We're going to go into Rolling Hills, which is a bigger region. And still mostly a lot of Democrats in the area feel that's a bad thing. But it's kind of a done deal. So if we then find a way to get through this gap year and get people covered, do you think that will sort of take, I wonder if that'll take some of the sting out of that, you know, allegation or something to run on for Democrats?
Yeah, I don't know how many people actually follow. The mental health issue is very complicated
yeah.
and I'm not going to,
yeah.
I'm a utility lawyer. I'm not a mental health expert, so I'm not going to, opine about whether that's good or bad or whether it's going to happen or not happen. I haven't read the law on that. I think a lot of people vote for their party at that level. I think we are lucky in Woodbury County that we are you actually know these people. So I think there's a lot more voting because that person's your neighbor. That person is a good person. They have a reputation with you as opposed to one particular issue.
Jeremy, what do you think? You think that's true?
Partially. I think I agree with her, though. I think the candidates should definitely comment on, you know, Three Rivers. But I think that it's true. I think people vote that way, correct? I agree.
Yeah. So I'd just like to ask of both of you, what's going to then go on this summer between now and the fall election? What kinds of things will your party be doing, Susan?
We always door knock. I think you'll see the candidates door knocking. Our candidates have a tradition of door knocking, and it's going to be a lot warmer than it was in January. You know, there will be mail that will be coming. People will be getting robocalls or other kinds of calls and other communications, just the usual kind of activity that you see in any political cycle. Mm-hmm. We are certainly prepared for that.
Right. And I heard J.D. Shulton on another radio station this morning said he was going to be out there knocking and knocking till people were, you know, tired of opening the door. But he said that's what you have to do to get to know people and to make sure people know you.
Right. I think that JD's right, and we do that all the time. We're going to be gearing it up. And the one thing I would say is that when JD knocks on your door, I don't think anybody's going to be sick of seeing him, though.
Well, he's a very personable guy, and he's very tall.
He's very tall. He's very tall.
And I think there's an old political, you know, canard about the tallest person always wins, but the bald person does not. So.
Well, they're both bald, aren't they?
I don't know. I don't know about
Well, if Steve I'm going
King
bald,
has lots
Steve
of hair.
Well, if
he
I'm
appears
bald,
to have a lot of hair.
If I'm bald, he's really bald. So.
But yeah, he seems to, he's making he's but he's a yeah he's a very enigmatic candidate, and he seems to connect with a lot of people.
And young and old.
Yep. Young and old, exactly. You know, there was one candidate that we thought he would run, and then he didn't. David Johnson. Up
yes.
in the 1st Senate District, who used to be a Republican.
Correct.
Became an independent, said he would run, then he said he wasn't going to run. Is that helpful for Republicans? Because now, do you think that that's kind of an area where Republicans can kind of take that back?
I think if you look at that district, for example, Lyon County, I think, had the highest percentage of voters in the state. And I only mention that because they just had their election.
Right.
That is such rock ribbed red country.
Yeah.
That it's interesting to me that David actually ever won that area, and you know I don't think it's going to have aside from the fact that it seems to be an entertaining news bite, I don't think that's going to have any impact on that area.
Mm-hmm. Up in Lamar's, where Representative Holtz,
correct,
he decided not to run again. Who won that race?
Jennery. A retired Jennery. Dentist.
Right. He won that, and he'll run against a Democrat in the fall.
I think so, yeah.
I'm assuming he will hold on to that in that area.
That's pretty rock-ribbed Republican country.
Yeah, I remember in the Senate race, they had the former superintendent of Lamar Schools.
Todd Wendt.
Yeah, Dr. Wendt's son.
Dr. Wendt, and then and it was Carlin. And it was interesting because the people that support, it was like they switched areas. Carlin got a lot of support in Lamar's, and Wendt got a lot of support here. It was like they just went like this. And so that said something to me, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure what it said. Did it say that Todd Wendt wasn't as well liked in Plymouth County, or that they're just better, good Republicans up there?
I think it was about, yeah, the Republicans, because I, from what I gather, he was very well liked.
And Jim was very close.
It was
an interesting election night, but that's what happens when you have Senate races that are made of different kinds of districts.
Right. You know, and the one thing I've noticed in the last year or so, all the talk about the 4th district. This is a huge district.
Oh, it is.
It's vast. It's the biggest district. It gets a lot of attention as it should, and it has a very well-known representative. But you know, Morningside College, they did a poll recently, mm-hmm. and they talked to people, a lot of them in that district, and it was interesting to me when they talked about things you know, like, you know, gun control and a lot of issues that were discussed, Medicaid, all that in the legislature, despite the fact that they had so many Republicans. I mean, a lot of these issues were varied more than I would have thought. And people, it kind of showed that just because you're a Republican or Democrat, that doesn't decide what you think about everything.
No, that's right.
I think we tend to think that way. And I thought, well, maybe not. Is that something in politics that maybe we need to consider sometimes, that everyone is not a, you know, a red or a blue?
Well, Well, I think you do see that even this year. We had a number of Republicans that voted differently on different bills that were party priorities.
Right, right. You know, Jeremy, it looks like you're going to have a very busy summer, aren't you?
It's going to be fun, though.
It's going to be fun, and you're going to be out there. Shulton is a big candidate. Who else are you going to be working with this summer?
Oh, wow. Deidre Hubble. We're working for Chris Hall, Jackie Smith, Carter Smith.
Right.
Oh, boy, who else? There's so many.
There are.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you have... I was going to point out Bob Henderson. Our Bob Henderson is running against
Tim Kaczyna.
Oh, right.
Bob Henderson
He's
claims,
run before.
Yeah, he ran the last time.
Yeah.
Bob claims he has 6,000 yard signs locations.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I don't know
and
about
it
that.
Is knocked on 9,000 doors.
I do remember.
So, I mean, we have these Energizer bunnies out there, and I'm sure you do, too, that are right. just...
Well, Dave Dawson's knocking doors. He's going crazy up in his area. And then we have also have Tim Kaczyna, like you said, too. So, yeah, we have a lot of candidates with a lot of really good work ahead of us.
I've certainly had several representatives from parties because I live like on Jackson Street, like 30th. Mm-hmm. I've had representatives from both parties come and ask if they could put signs in yard. I'm like, no, you can't put any sign for anyone in my yard. But there are plenty of signs going up.
Right.
Because that's prime territory.
And there will be more. Yeah, that's especially Jackson Street. But no, we similarly have a lot of energized candidates and we'll be. We have the Western Iowa Republican Party of Iowa office is located in Sioux City.
Right.
And we have Reynolds staff here, and I'm sure you'll have, I don't know if you have a headquarters. You do have a headquarters, don't you?
We do, 833 okay. Gordon Drive.
Just down, yeah. down yeah. the road here, right?
Yep.
And you just moved there recently.
May?
It seems more recent
March,
than
actually.
It is. I remember you on Facebook. You kind of showed. And you.
It was March, actually, yeah.
Was it March? Wow. Time goes by.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. You know, I guess, you know, finally looking at Governor Reynolds, do you think, Susan, that she has vulnerability in this race in the fall? Do you think she talks a lot about her record? She was just here Monday,
yes, she
right?
was. Yes.
And I heard her on another radio station. They were talking about tax cuts and all these different things that she's done. Do you think that those things are going to resonate with people, not just Republicans, but maybe some Democrats as well?
Oh, I think she will. I think she has a lot of support throughout the state. A lot of good things happened last year during her years in the legislature, her year and a half, I guess, in the legislature. And I think that is going to resonate with the Iowa voter, whether you're Republican, Democrat, or independent.
Right, right. How do you think Fred Hubble is going to deal with that?
Well, I think that he is going to fight for teachers.
Right.
I think he's going to restore collective bargaining for us. I think he's also going to have to deal with, hopefully he's going to have to deal with a mess that's going to be the tariff situation that's taking place with soybeans that the president is creating himself.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And there's a huge problem. I'm hoping conservatives are taking a look at that one because as a farm kid myself, who walked beans and I have the scars on my legs to prove it, I'm really worried about that with the farmers.
Mm. Okay. Susan, any final
Well, I certainly words? Hope he can't alone change collective bargaining. We're going to have a Senate and a House that are going to have to work on those issues. And I would just point out that Senators Grassley and Ernst are very much involved in the tariff issues. And
what about the RFS?
And the RFS, that's another issue that Senator Grassley and Senator Ernst
Renewable fuels.
The renewable fuel standards.
Standards.
And
right.
the RINs you can buy in lieu of blending with ethanol.
Right.
And we have our elected our federal elected representatives are really on top of those issues. And almost every day I think they're putting something out about what the current status of that is.
Mm. Anything else, Jeremy, you'd like to say?
I would just like invite everyone to the Woodbury Dems office. If you'd like to get involved, we need you now. If you want to, don't wait until November to be a part of the blue wave. Start now.
Can I just echo exactly what you said, except substitute red for blue. We encourage a lot of political activity. It's good for society and for our country.
Exactly. Well, I've been talking with Susan Stewart, the chair of the Woodbury County Republican Party, and Jeremy Dumkriger, the chairman of the Woodbury County Democratic Party. Thank you both for being here and talking about those primaries. You're listening to The Exchange, and now we're going to hear a little bit about Celtic Woman. That group is coming to the Orpheum on Saturday night. You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. The group Celtic Woman has several centuries worth of Irish music to draw upon, and their repertoire is really an amalgamation of newer ditties and older melodies. It stands to reason that older, more obscure Irish folk songs resonate with audiences who are eager for an authentic Emerald Isle music experience. And that is a song from Celtic Woman. Siouxlanders will get a chance to see them in person this Saturday night at the Orpheum Theater. I talked with one of the singers from the group, Eve McMahon, about the group's history, how they do what they do, and their inspirations.
Tara McNeil, she plays the fiddle, violin, and the Irish harp. Then there's Susan McFadden, she's one of the singers, and she's from a musical theatre background. There's Mairead Carlin, and she's from a classically trained background. And then there's me, and I'm from a traditional Irish trained background. And then that's only really the beginning. That's what you see on the posters, you know, Celtic Woman. But actually, it's so much bigger than that. We travel with about 40 to 50 people. You know, we have a full band. We have a bagpiper, an Uilleann piper, guitarists, drummers, percussionists, dancers, a choir. So and then that's only what you see on stage. And then obviously behind the scenes, then there's even more people. So we travel in three big tour buses with two big trucks as well to carry all the stuff. So there's lots of us, and we love being on the road together. We're like a big family.
Yeah, I never would have thought you had so many people that traveled with you.
I know, it's amazing. Nobody really does. And when we explain that, you know, that's just, there's so much that goes into getting, you know, the show on the road, and what goes into getting us all on stage. You know, it's an amazing process. But we are all so close, and it's nice that we all travel together, because, you know, it means that there's kind of a lot of us all the time together. So you never really feel homesick or anything like that, because there's always lots of other people around you that kind of know you from home.
How do you all decide what you're going to do? And you know, do you say, well, we'll do this on this album, we'll do this on that album? Or do you sort of find out from people that you sing for?
Well, we have an amazing musical director and arranger. His name is Gavin Murphy. And he would kind of work with us a lot when it comes to, let's say, a new album after a tour. And he'll sit down with us and he'll say, right, what do you love singing? You know, what are your favorite songs? Or because in the end of the day, they really want all of us to feel comfortable and confident on stage as well. So it's amazing how his process, because he'll listen to you and then he'll go away and come up with ideas and then come back to you again and get you to sing them and see if they work. And that's usually how the kind of process starts. And then once we pick the song, then we go into studio and we'll try and sing it through and see how it sounds kind of recorded. And then after that, it goes to stage, and that's for the new tour then. So we'll actually be going back into that process again soon after this tour. We've got a new symphony tour coming up, and we'll have some new music as well. So once we finish our North American tour, we go home and we kind of start that kind of creative and process again, where he'll be coming up with songs and we'll be singing through them and all that kind of thing. I love that part.
Are you all ever surprised at how your music really crosses, you know, into all different levels of age, women, men, from different countries all over? You've had this amazing success around the world.
Yeah, it's always just so incredible. I still can't believe it, to be honest. You know, and the thing about Celtic Woman is that it does appeal to everybody. It's universal. It kind of breaks all the boundaries across the board of music. And I think that's because it does fall into the world music category, where, you know, we are all from completely different genres that, like, in other circumstances would never be put together. Like, you wouldn't normally put traditional classical and musical theatre together, three girls, you know, singing those three genres and then with a, you know, classical violinist all together at the same time. But because we do have that, you know, uniqueness, we do sound different to anything else that's kind of been put out there at the moment. So I think when people come to the show, you know, it does attract everybody because they haven't heard this sound before. So it's not like, you know, if you like pop music, oh, go to Celtic Woman, or if you like, you know, classical music. It's really like if you like any kind of music, come to the show and there'll be something for you there.
And I think that a lot of us have seen performances on public television here. That's where I've seen a lot of your performances. And now, you started professionally singing when you were 16. Is that correct?
Professionally, yeah. I did my first PBS special in America when I was 15, actually. Yeah, which was mad. Like, that seems so young now. But I actually had been in Anuna, which is the River Dance Choir, for a year prior to that. And I just used to ask them, can I go on the next trip? And they were like, you're too young, Ava. Like, I was still in school and everything. But then eventually then they said, look, if your dad comes with you as a chaperone, you can go to the US. So I did my first kind of professional, like international gig at 15. It was a PBS special here in the States singing. That was amazing. And before that, I was kind of just competing in Ireland at like a national level for this traditional style of singing that I sing in called Shannos. And so that was what I was doing from the age of 12. So yeah, it was then 15 when I started singing professionally.
So you pretty much spent your adult life singing.
Yeah, yeah. And to be honest, my mum like has been amazing because she always kind of said, you know, singing is great and you know, you love it so much and it's something you already know you have such a passion for and you love. But she was like, it's really important to me, you know, that you continue doing your school and you don't leave school at 15, because I really wanted to leave school and just pursue music. Because when I went to America that time, they said, you know, if you moved here, you'd have, you know, you should move here and you should give it a go. And my mum was like, no, she's finishing out school. So I did finish out school and I actually went and did a human rights degree in Ireland in university. So I went on to third level and did that while singing as well on the side. So it wasn't until after I finished my degree that I kind of made the decision. I came to a crossroads and I was like, right, now this is the time I need to make a decision. Am I going to just go full force for this music career or am I going to go into law? So that was the two options and I chose music.
You're well educated, and but you're doing what you really want to do for now.
Exactly. And what I love is that, you know, I've never let the other side of me go either. Like, I still work in human rights, even nearly more now that I'm a singer, because I feel like, you know, being a singer gives you a platform every night on stage to give a message of, you know, hope, unity, togetherness. That's all I wanted to do while I was doing my degree. So I work with a number of different charities, one called the Christina Noble Children's Foundation. I'm one of the board of directors for that. So I very much keep that side of me alive as well as being a singer. So I feel like because of keeping up the school, I kind of have the best of both worlds when it comes to, you know, having the education side and being able to use that, but also being able to do what my passion has always been, which is music.
Is there a theme to your, you know, what you're going to be doing here when you come to town in this particular program?
There is, actually, and it's probably my favorite, I think, tour we've done so far. This is my third year in Celtic Woman. And last year we went home, which I hadn't done that before. I hadn't performed in Ireland with Celtic Woman, and it was our big arena. So like what you like your local, like wherever your local biggest place is to perform, for us is the Three Arena, excuse me. And we were so excited. Like we'd spent the whole year traveling abroad, doing our show abroad, and then there was this talk of we're going to do it at home now, and it was so exciting. So we decided to put some new music together for the show, and we got all our family and friends and all of Ireland like really backed it. It was amazing, and they all came and filled out this arena, and we performed it, and it was called Homecoming. And then because it was such a special night, we decided we'd record the whole thing as a DVD and an album. So our new album, Homecoming, is a completely live album from that night. Like, we didn't go into a studio at all. It's completely live from that night. And that's the show we're bringing around North America now. So we're really proud of it, and it definitely has something very special about it. It definitely has quite an Irish theme to it, because obviously we were going home, so we wanted to show the people of Ireland that we are spreading, you know, Irish music around the world. And yeah, so that would be kind of the theme. It would very much like what it means for us to be at home. And we always say that as much as Ireland is our home, you know, America and North America has very much taken a part of our heart, because we've been here so much. I'm in America more than I'm in Ireland, you know, because we travel so much. So, you know, we really want to show the people here that they mean so much to us, and that without them, we really wouldn't probably be doing what we're doing, because we've just had such an amazing response from North America.
That was Abe McMahon, one of the singers in Celtic Woman. The group will perform this Saturday night at the Orpheum Theater in downtown Sioux City. Celtic Woman. They'll be appearing this Saturday night at the Orpheum in downtown Sioux City. You've been listening to The Exchange here on Siouxland Public Media. Coming up next, we're going to go to Freakonomics, and then this afternoon, coming up at 2 o'clock, it's Fresh Air.